So welcome once again, everyone, especially for visiting for the first time to St. Monica's. It's a great pleasure to be honored by your presence and to celebrate the Lord's sacraments with you and to share the Word of God proclaimed to you already and beautiful songs of praise, giving thanks for all that God has blessed us with. Actually, just to start off, this weekend, starting on Friday, there was a wonderful women's retreat. Cornerstone is it's kind of like a brand name, and they lead the retreat, and they had a retreat here. We're very lucky. We've been having them for the last couple of years. Hopefully we'll have another one next year. It's not guaranteed, but we're looking forward to that. The retreat we had here was for women who are 18 and older, and to help them in their life journey of faith, to see how God was working in their lives by not so much being preached to, but having women give witness talks about in an organized way, or kind of a reflection on how God was working in their lives in obvious times and in less so obvious times. So it was very, very powerful. We're so happy that so many women came out to the retreat, and anything that we can do to support any of our men's retreat. We also have a Cornerstone men's retreat, and then the women's retreat. Anything we can do to support them is a great thing. It's only one of the ways in which we help people in their life of their journey of faith, their life of being spiritual. But it's always good to celebrate those moments when they do come. So we used to have them once a year, both the men and both the women. And so we just had our women's retreat. It was very, very powerful. I don't want to say successful, because success assumes that there's kind of like the same level for every person. And every person has a different attitude when they come to the retreat. And they're all moved. That's true. It's very powerful for all of them. But the level of success, it varies. Because sometimes people need to come on a retreat more than once. Sometimes they just need to come once. Sometimes they need to come once every few years. So everything is relative to the person's particular faith. And the good thing about the retreat is, you know, we take them wherever any man or woman is in their life of faith. That's where we begin. So it was a very powerful moment for the parish this past weekend. The scriptures today speak very beautifully about at least the prophet Isaiah. He startles us because he's such a genius. He's one of the people that is just amazing. Everything that he was able to say as a prophet was not just beautiful, but it was also true, and it was kind of like a soaring eagle above everyone's head. It kind of like is untouchable. You can see it pass over, and you don't really realize the majesty of it until afterwards when you reflect on it. So the scriptures today talk about, at least the first reading, Isaiah says that he speaks for the land. So he's speaking for the land, and he's speaking for God. So there's like a dialogue that he's having in his actual passage from today, from the first reading. He says, first of all, there's this mound which still exists in the city of Jerusalem. It's called Mount Zion, where the temple used to exist. Doesn't exist there now. There's a Muslim mosque there, but at the time that's where Jerusalem, the temple was. And so he speaks for the temple, and he says that, God, you may forget us, Yahweh, you may forget us, and wouldn't know what to do if that ever happened. And then the response, Isaiah provides the response as well, and speaking for the Lord, he says, no, I can never forget you. I brought you into this world, which is true. He created this race of people for himself, promised to Abraham, delivered by Moses. Now they're living in that area around Jerusalem. And Yahweh, through the mouth of Isaiah, says, I can never forget you. It's easier for me to forget you than, it would be easier for me to forget you than if I could forget myself. So those two things are almost identical. My people and the one true God, they're the same thing. So if I were to forget you, I would be forgetting myself, and we would both dissolve into nothingness. And then the example that he gives is, as an infant child is helpless and dependent, utterly beautiful and unique in the world, even if that infant child were to lose its mother, and the mother would be forlorn because of that, I could never do that to you. I could never be separate from you, and I could never be sad about being, even for a moment, to have space between the two. That would never happen, because I'm God. And it would be easier for me to be not God than for that to happen. That's what the prophet Isaiah says. So it's very beautiful. Just a very few short words, very powerful testament to not only what humans are to themselves, a mother and an infant child, but about what God is for the chosen people, what God is for Jesus, what God is for the church, us, people in the world of faith, people who have a goodwill to do things which are helpful for all common humanity. So that's the beautiful kind of resonance that we have in the first reading. Jesus kind of says the same thing. Well, not kind of, he does. He says how beautiful it is that we should all be so focused on God that even our daily cares would never allow us to see ourselves as separate from God. How beautiful that would be if we could do that. It's almost impossible. It's very, very hard to do that on a daily basis. But if we could allow ourselves to acquire that habit of faith, of strong, enduring faith through all difficult times, then we would be like he's talking about. People who don't serve God and then serve other interests. We serve God and we attend to other interests as they arise. So that's, Jesus says that's the preference. It's difficult to do, but that's the preference. In my time as a priest, before I came to this parish, I was working over at the hospital, and one thing I learned about being in the hospital is how mothers relate to their children. And so I learned there's this whole terminology about infants and mothers and how you care for them and what happens. So one thing I learned is not only do they have different names about, you know, in terms of age, chronological age of an infant, before it's born, and it's born, and it comes into the world, and you take care of it. So I learned that there's actually like different buildings to correspond to the different types of medical care that you would give to infants. And so first of all, I learned that, if you're going to have a baby, you have to sign up with the hospital. They kind of give you a little tour of the ward where you're going to be at. And then once it's finally time for your due date, you go in and they bring you into your room, and then you go from your room to labor and delivery. And then after, hopefully you have your baby on time, that's great. And then after that, they bring the mom to observation. If there's any problem with them, if there's not any problems, then they just put you in the neonatal ward, the baby, and you come and visit and the baby's doing great. And after a couple of days, they discharge you and you go home. If there's any problems, let's say for example, the baby is premature, which happens a lot, then that's kind of like a little bit of a danger, because the baby that's premature would be very prone to acquiring some sort of illness, because their immune system is very, very low at that time, especially when you're premature. So the marvels of medical science have allowed us to know that babies who are premature, they in the olden days they would pass away, but now we can keep them alive. But what we have to do is put them in a sterile environment so that no infectious diseases or germs can harm them, because they're so weak, because they're just coming into the world, but without a proper defense system. So that's what we know is that they call it the neonatal ICU. They call it the NICU. And so it's a very difficult place, because usually the baby is in that ward. If there's an issue, for example, she's premature, he or she's premature, they put you in like a little incubator. It's like a little glass case, well, plastic case. There's like a little light in there, and they have a little circle cutouts where you can put your hands in. We were wearing gloves and everything, but you can put your hands in, and that's where the nurses kind of touch the baby. And usually the baby has, IV tubes or some sort, different wires to monitor the heartbeat, respiration, all things like that, just to make sure things are okay. The difficult thing, though, which is a big sacrifice, is the mother, because it's normal for a mom and her newborn baby to be close to each other physically, usually like being held right here on their chest. That's like a normal thing to happen. But what happens in that case, because of the chance of disease, even from a mother, is that they have to be in that little, basically it's like a little plastic case. And what happens is that the mom's not even allowed to pick up the baby until after a certain amount of time. The doctor says it's okay, then it's different. But in the beginning, the mom has to stand right next to the little bassinet, the clear bassinet, and they can't pick up the baby. They can allow the nurses to touch the baby, but the mom can't. So that's a big sacrifice that the mom has to make, because most mothers, their first reaction is to be with their baby, physically touching their skin to skin, but at least having their body touching the warmth and feeling the warmth immediately, with nothing impeding that from happening. That's kind of a spiritual bond that happens right from the very beginning. So that's what one of the things that I learned is that oftentimes there's big sacrifices that people have to make right in a newborn's life from the very, very first moments of being delivered into the world. So That was a good learning experience. I knew that people had babies, they go to the hospital, they come out of the hospital, but I didn't know what type of sequence of events happens when they're in the hospital. So that was one of the things that I learned. I learned that so many miracles happen in a hospital that it's really worthwhile for us to always, you know, pray for doctors and nurses and technicians who help us to survive difficult moments like that. The beautiful thing that we can all learn, I think, not from my experience, but from the fact that God cares for us so much that He wants us to, at least the prophet Isaiah says that we are spoken to by God as equals, although we'll never be equals to God. That's the amazing thing that Isaiah tells us. He reveals to us, he says that there's this dialogue that happens between Zion and God, but it's people speaking to each other on an equal plane. They're almost like friends, and they're worried about the friendship breaking up. It hasn't broken up, but they're worried that if it does break up, there would be something disastrous that would happen. So God's reassuring the quote-unquote infant that even if there might be something which were to happen, God would never abandon His people, that infant, or us. Never. It's impossible. God is basically saying, it's impossible. It would be easier for me to dissolve into thin air than for me to stop being God and not be with you. So the beauty of our journey of faith is that we're never alone. We may find ourselves to be maybe away from God for a while, or maybe we've been hurt in some way, and then we build a kind of defensive barriers around ourselves so that we're not hurt again in the same way. But that's something that we do. That's something that God does. And so God, being all-seeing, all-knowing, and all-powerful, He can always reach out over those barriers and touch us and bring us close to Him once again, the way a mother would bring her baby back to her when the time is right. So that's the kind of the motion of love that Isaiah speaks about, is this motion of deep concern and compassion, this mercy that two beings have, because it makes them not only feel good, but it actually completes who they are. So Isaiah is saying something very beautiful, something very extraordinary, because God is revealing through the prophet Isaiah that not only is God pleased to be close to you and your neighbor, but somehow if God didn't love you as much as God does, that would almost be like erasing something of God from the world, which is impossible to happen. It can't happen. It's a logical impossibility. It doesn't make sense. It's not scriptural. It's not anything that's revealed to us by divine inspiration. God always will reach out because of who He is and bring you back to Him, because that's what makes Him not only happy, but what makes Him a merciful and loving God. So I have this little book here, just like two little quotes I'm going to read for you. The book is called, the title is I Love Being a Mom, Treasured Stories, Memories, and Milestones. And it's written by Therese Borchard, and she went to Notre Dame. She has a degree from there. And she wrote this little book of, well, she's an editor of this anthology. And it's a nice little anthology. Chapter 4 is called Baby Bliss, B-L-I-S-S. And I'm just going to read you little quotes. It talks about how, you know, moms are relating to their children, but also how there's something spiritual and metaphysical and supernatural about that relationship, and why it's important for not only moms, but for all of us to listen, kind of get a peek into what exactly is happening. This is a quote from Jane Seymour, who used to be an actress, and this is what she says. It's hard to have a dark mood with a gurgling, delightful, cherubic baby kissing you and hugging you. So that's what she says. So if you're a mom, or if you're a woman and you're having a very, very stressed out day, you're having a really bad day, maybe a couple of bad days, as soon as you come in contact with a little baby that you like, or your own infant child, it's possible for you to leave your dark mood behind, and then you kind of, by osmosis, you take this innocence, this new look of on life into yourself, because you're in contact with something marvelous. It's something which is a miracle being brought into the world. And now somehow you're kind of not just one person touching a baby. You're kind of becoming affected in a way as if you were equals. You're really not. The infant's still an infant, but you're kind of being affected as if this was a real person whom you have a friendship with. That's exactly what Isaiah is talking about. So most likely all the ladies here, you're never in a bad mood. Don't get me wrong. You'll never have like a stressed out day. But if you were, having your neighbors or your best friend's baby come over and, you know, cuddling with it a little bit and letting it breathe into your, you know, past your ear, that's a nice sound. Kind of brings you back to the miracle of life. Those are good things that can happen. Totally changes your mood. Makes you realize how blessed you are to have friends and to have family and to be around new life. This is a quote from Anne Murrow Lindberg. And this is what she says. In the sheltered simplicity of the first days after a baby is born, one sees again the magical closed circle, the miraculous sense of two people existing only for each other. So the newborn baby, just out of labor and delivery, the mother's in the room, nurse brings the baby over, it's all cleaned up, looks great, it's in a nice little blanket, it's nice and warm, comes over, and now two people are in a sense one. They both depend on each other for different reasons. One for emotional reasons, one for physical reasons. But they're both one and united in a new way that didn't exist before. That's the beauty of connecting in this spiritual way with anyone. Because it leads you to think, can I have that same relationship with God? And the answer is yes. It doesn't seem like it's possible, it doesn't seem like it's right, but it can still happen. God's always going to be totally merciful and all-knowing and all-loving, but he still not demands, he desires something for himself. He wants you for himself as a friend, as if you were equal, but you'll never be equal, but you'll be able to be his friend because he wants you to be his friend. So the beauty of today is to be taken in little doses. Little doses, little steps is good. There's a time for that. But we learn that God is so amazingly wonderful that he gives us so many little miracles for us to kind of gaze upon and pick out the ones that we prefer. Isaiah likes he likes the example of a little baby. That really kind of makes sense to him. That's something real. That's concrete. He sees that as being really, really a miracle of life. And it's never going to go away. There's always going to be babies in the world. And those babies are going to make you think about the world in a different way than you thought about before. It's going to make you think about yourself in a different way than you thought before. It's going to make you think about God in a way you have never thought about before.